Welcome to the Colodrone conundrum, or I should say to the copyright conundrum. But, you know, sometimes I feel that I'm a conundrum too, even to myself. And the thing is that I'll be telling you today about copyright, of course, but also a little bit about myself. And so it's fair to say, welcome to the copyright conundrum, but also to the Colodrone conundrum. So you're going to get the two of them for the same price. Anyway, thank you very much for coming. Today, the publishing industry is confronting an enormous paradox. The digital revolution has transformed the act of copying content and then sharing that content into something like a second nature for anyone with an electronic device. But most of today's consumers of content give very little thought about the implications of their sharing behavior. With a few quick keystrokes, information gets passed on to dozens, hundreds, or even thousands of new users in a split second. But what about the person or the entity who owns the rights to the content? Are they even aware that their work has been used or appropriated? Have they granted the user of that content permission to share it? And will they eventually be compensated for its use? Well, we all know that there is a system in place designed to ensure that these things happen, and it's called copyright. And yet copyright is undergoing today pretty serious scrutiny and pressure. The detractors say that the system is outdated and that it clings to business models that were formed in the physical world of paper and ink. And so they say the old rules no longer apply. They say that copyright restrains access to knowledge and that it stifles creativity and innovation. These critics also say that the system is too complicated when it comes to seeking the permission of rights holders, that the process is just too difficult to navigate, especially across borders where different copyright rules apply in different countries. And then you have the most extreme critics, those who call for the total elimination of the system, saying things like copyright violates nearly every tenet of laissez-faire capitalism, or using one of the more popular mantras of the internet age, that information wants to be free, and copyright doesn't make any sense. So are they right? Do the critics of copyright actually have a case? Does copyright represent a barrier to innovation and creativity? Or is the real problem not so much about copyright law, but rather about finding efficient business models and finding better ways to achieve a balance between meeting the needs and demands of users and ensuring that rights holders receive fair compensation for the use of their works? I'll pause here and tell you a quick personal story. It's about my grandmother, Maria Dolores, or Lola, who in the early 1930s was a young school teacher in the city of Ronda in southern Spain. She used to spend her weekends at her parents' home in Malaga City, some 80 kilometers away from Ronda. And so every Sunday, she would take the train from Malaga to Ronda to spend the week teaching in a primary school there. And at the end of the school week, she would make the return train trip back home. Now, Ronda is in a pretty mountainous area of the country, and it took the train 7 long hours to cover those 80 kilometers. In fact, the train crawled along so slowly in places that my grandmother, to relieve the burden of sitting for so long, would get off the train as it was moving to walk alongside it, just to stretch her legs for a few minutes. Then she would hop back on the train, return to her seat, and continue on her journey. Now fast forward, say, 40 years, early to mid-1970s. I am a young boy living in Madrid. And at that time, a train trip from Madrid to Malaga also took about 7 hours. But the distance it covered in that time was 600 kilometers. An astonishing advance if you compare it to the 80 kilometers that my grandmother traveled in the 1930s. For me, this is a reminder of how far we had evolved in just a few generations and of how fast transportation and many other things had changed in 40 years. But not everything had changed so much. I think it's fair to say that the ways in which books, newspapers, and magazines were produced, distributed, and consumed in 1970 had remained basically the same as they were back in 1930 and even before. I grew up as a kid, spending a lot of time in the bookshop that my grandfather Juan opened in Malaga City, the largest and most important bookshop in town for almost 5 decades. And I witnessed there the introduction over the years of new communication technologies such as the fax or the telex machine, which certainly helped to process orders and manage other administrative stuff, but which didn't disrupt at all the basic business concept or the ways things were done. Again, things were done pretty much the same as they were done back in the 1930s and before. But as I started my career at the National Library of Spain in Madrid, this was the early 90s, things, of course, had started to change very fast, also for publishing, for libraries, for the book industry. And from then on, I think that the speed of change just accelerated. And it impacted, and it's impacting very much, very profoundly, the ways in which we all communicate, the ways in which we produce and consume knowledge, and I would add the ease in which we access, use, and share information. And so, we need only to examine the rise and the dominance of Google, YouTube, and Twitter to measure how far we've come and how quickly we've gotten where we are today. Just consider these figures. 1998, the year Google was launched. Users were making 500 searches per day. And today, we have more than 2 million Google searches per second. YouTube. Over 6 billion hours of video are watched each month on YouTube. And users upload 300 hours of video to YouTube every minute. Twitter. Around 6,000 tweets are posted on Twitter every second. Hopefully, some of them about this presentation right now. And these 6,000 tweets per second correspond to 500 million tweets every day. So we can talk about an explosion of content that's, well, nearly defies imagination, right? I think that consumers today have, well, they never had, like today, so many opportunities about what to watch, what to read, what to listen to, and what to share with others. And it's the same for creators. They never had more opportunities to create and to disseminate what they create. And I think that all this activity is certainly contributing to our great and global knowledge economy. But I also believe that along with this ability to access all this wealth of information and knowledge comes the responsibility to honor the system of permissions, protections, and balances that we call copyright. At least, I would say, for 3 reasons. Because copyright protects a distinct type of property, because copyright remunerates creators, and also because it supports access to knowledge, it supports creativity and innovation. So what I will do now is I will look into each of these 3 reasons in a bit of more detail. Copyright, I said, serves to protect a distinct type of property, a special kind of what we call intellectual property. And when we talk about other types of property, for example, real estate, cars, clothes, whatever, there never seems to be any controversy. The owners of those types of property are allowed to decide and control how they want to use it, whether to keep it or sell it or rent it. And of course, they are allowed to receive remuneration when they permit others to use it. So why shouldn't the owner of a creative work be able to have that same sort of control? Of course, creative works are of a special nature for many reasons. But I think one of them, a very important one, is because innovation and knowledge in our societies heavily rely on them. And it is supremely ironic to me that some of the loudest detractors of the current copyright system are the technology companies that make their living off the sharing habits of their customers. These companies are among the most prominent advocates of what they call fixing copyright or modernizing copyright, what others may think should rather be called loosening or even weakening copyright. And yet, the ability of these same companies to do business, to innovate, and also to enjoy the financial compensation that comes from their creativity and innovation, all those things are in fact protected by the numerous patents and trademarks that safeguard their own intellectual property. As I said, I find this pretty ironic. Why again is it important to have sound copyright systems? The second reason is because they are a proven way to remunerate creators and producers of creative content. And what seems especially unfair to me is that any expansion of the limitations and exceptions to exclusive rights that some copyright critics are demanding should come at the cost of remuneration for authors and other rights holders. See, for instance, what Ms. Julia Reda recently proposed in her report on copyright issues to the European Parliament. And I think I need to explain this a little bit. Maybe to remind those in the audience who are not that familiar with some basic copyright concepts. Creators are granted certain exclusive rights under copyright laws and international treaties, allowing them to permit others to use their works to exercise their rights in exchange of our remuneration. And rights holders can do this through either individual licensing or collective licensing. Then you have specific types of use and cases for which copyright laws establish exceptions and limitations to the general rule. The general rule being that one needs permission from the rights holder before using his or her work. These exceptions and limitations can be legally configured as necessarily generating a compensation for rights holders or not generating that compensation. And so there is a whole spectrum of solutions to facilitate access to protected works. You have individual licensing, collective licensing, remunerated exceptions and limitations, and unremunerated exceptions and limitations. And what many of the copyright critics are very strongly advocating for is for the only one of these solutions which doesn't guarantee a financial reward for creators. Honestly, I don't find this to be a balanced approach, and I think that copyright should be all about balances. Why should authors and publishers of contents be forced to simply give their work away? It makes no economic sense. If this sort of standard became the rule under the premise that it would help, you know, access to knowledge, it would make it easier, then it might make equal sense to apply the same standard to other industries serving the knowledge economy. Under this crazy standard, the big internet service providers might be required to give free connections to their customers. Utility companies, they might be obliged to give free electrical service to anyone with a computer, or at least to schools and research and cultural institutions. Think of furniture companies. furniture companies might be forced to donate their tables and chairs and bookshelves to local libraries. Why not? Why should authors and publishers be the only ones expected to bear the funding of access to knowledge through the expropriation of their own rights? Again, I think this is a pretty unfair approach. And of course, there are businesses which include philanthropy in their business models, but it is nonetheless a choice for them. And I think it should be the same for rights holders. Anyway, the absurdity of these scenarios that I just described, I think it makes an important point for those who want to limit the ability for rights holders to receive compensation for the use of the works. And this leads me to the third reason why I firmly believe that copyright is so important. My conviction that it supports and promotes access to knowledge, innovation, and creativity. It is becoming more and more common these days to hear this criticism. Copyright stifles, copyright restrains access to knowledge, it restrains innovation and creativity. And every time I hear this, really, I find it to be openly preposterous. I don't know if you've heard of this American author, Jaron Lanier. He's a computer scientist, and he's written a couple of very interesting books, You Are Not a Gadget and Who Owns the Future, which, by the way, I highly recommend you to read if you haven't yet. Well, in his latest book, Who Owns the Future, Lanier says that the current obsession with free information is disguising the fact that information is people, and that people ought to be paid for value they contribute. And then Lanier adds that the penalty for not recognizing the role of human beings in the value chain would involve killing the golden goose that produces the value in the first place. Dr. Francis Gurry, Director General of the World Intellectual Property Organization, made a similar point during a recent conversation with Jens Bammel, who is the Secretary General of the International Publishers Association. Gurry said that copyright is the principal market mechanism for incentivizing the production of cultural content, and that there are no other real alternatives. And then he added these statements that I love, because it's very simple, but very to the point. He said that in order to have access to something, you have to have that something. And copyright plays an indispensable role in ensuring that we all have that something that you can have access to. It's beautiful. Jens Bammel from the International Publishers Association, in a recent meeting of the United Nations Human Rights Commission that took place a few weeks ago, called copyright a success story because it has increased access to culture and science, and it has created enormous opportunities for both consumers and the creative industries. So this is another somewhat funny side of the Colodron conundrum. And of course, I meant of the copyright conundrum. The fact that the publishing industry, which is an industry built on innovation, inspiration, and creativity, now stands accused of holding to old, outdated business models, and only for the sake of survival. But there is, or I think that copyright, in very different ways, drives innovation. And the publishing industry offers a number of good examples. Think, for instance, of the scholarly publishing arena. The critics insist that the usual monetary incentives do not apply here, because they say scientific researchers generally are not motivated by copyright or by its economic benefits. Instead, detractors say, researchers are more interested in attaining intellectual recognition, which can lead to prestigious awards or even to interesting, lucrative careers in industry or in academia. But what is often left out of this conversation is any thought about how copyright thus incentivizes publishers of scholarly works so that they can develop the business models required to achieve something crucial: convert data about a new scientific finding or a new technical advance into a reliable, standardized, high-quality article that effectively delivers and conveys this information to new researchers and more scholars. And here, I fully agree with Mr. Adam Mossoff. Adam Mossoff recently wrote a paper for George Mason University School of Law about how copyright drives innovation in scholarly publishing. And Mossoff says that publishers exemplify the benefits of copyright by successfully investing hundreds of millions of dollars in creating innovative distribution mechanisms that disseminate high-quality, peer-reviewed, reliable research to researchers throughout a wide range of academic disciplines. You may be familiar with the widespread claim these days that there is very little cost to building, operating, and maintaining online platforms and ordering mechanisms for the distribution of cultural content. Well, clearly, at least to me and to many others, this claim has in reality no merit. Now, there is one area of the conversation where the copyright critics may indeed have a case, and it's their complaints that the present system is too complicated when it comes to seeking the permission of rights holders to use copyrighted works. And at the heart of this debate is, of course, the matter of licensing and the need to make the licensing process as easy and effective as possible for everyone, for the creator, the publisher, the consumer, and any other party along the digital content supply chain. We at Copyright Clearance Center believe that rights holders and organizations like ours who work for rights holders need to embrace solutions that accomplish three things. Support the principles of copyright, of course. Promote the work of creators. And very importantly, simplify copyright compliance and licensing for both content owners and content users. And this is absolutely key. We must make the process as easy as possible for the user to lawfully do what they want to do with the content. I believe that we at CCC are proving that it is possible to create efficient and market-driven solutions that make copyright work for everyone. Solutions that help to meet the users' demands and needs, and at the same time generate new revenue opportunities for rights holders. And fortunately, we're not the only ones who have this vision. Many others share the same concept. And I want to briefly refer here to the very important vision paper that I recommend you to read, the vision paper that the European Publishers Council published last year. In this vision paper, the European Publishers Council calls for a seamless media and publishing ecosystem powered by three elements: technology, copyrights, and the implementation of practical, viable, and very importantly, user-relevant solutions. Ultimately, I think that what we need is a fair and balanced copyright system that includes exclusive rights, streamlined ways to access these rights, but also, of course, room for appropriate exceptions and limitations that should always stay exceptional and not harm the rights holder's ability to create, to continue creating, right, new works. Perhaps this last story that I have for you captures a bit of promise for the future of copyright. A few weeks ago, my youngest son, Pablo, who's 10 years old, asked me if it was possible for him to use a song in a video that he had shot and that he wanted to post on YouTube. And believe me, I haven't indoctrinated him that badly about the need to respect copyright. But the guy certainly knows where his dad makes a living from. Anyway, Pablo's question triggered a very interesting conversation touching on concepts such as moral rights, exceptions and limitations, copyright enforcement, and even automated rights licensing. So you would understand if I tell you that his eyes appeared to glaze over a bit, and I wouldn't blame him for it, but I just couldn't resist, you know, to miss the chance of making this conversation a learning moment for him. And of course, I was proud that he asked the question. In the end, I had to admit that, to my knowledge, there was no easy way to obtain permission to use a song in the way that Pablo wanted to use it. But I tried to assure him a little and told him, "We're working on it, son. We are working on it. Thank you very much."